Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and this is the Friday Roundtable. Today, what it means to graduate from college in debt. And this topic came to us via a listener named Paula, who made a compelling argument about how college debt stifles creativity and innovation. She wrote this in an email. Society benefits from having well-educated young people coming out of college and grad school, being able to act on new ideas without the burden of middle-age awareness and obligations. Paula adds, are we facilitating the risk-taking, the innovation of young adults? Not at all. So this hour, a discussion about what it means that the average American college student graduates owing around $30,000 in student loans, and that 44 million Americans owe collectively $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. What does that mean for the graduate? And I think just as importantly, what does it mean for the rest of us? So three roundtablers on this and your thoughts via social media. Have you had to make different career decisions or personal decisions because you owe thousands in student loan debt? Tell me about that on Twitter. And if you're someone who has maybe paid off your loans and you're through that part of your life, what does it mean that we are burdening the next generation of great employees with all of this student loan debt? So I want to hear from you on Twitter. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Isaac Jarris is majoring in business at Normandale Community College, where he's involved in an organization that advocates for college students in Minnesota. He plans to complete his degree at Metro State. Isaac, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Trey Williams is director of TRIO Student Support Services at Carleton College. Welcome. Good to have you here, Trey.
Thank you for having
me.
And
back on the roundtable, I should
Absolutely.
Say. And Sharon Smith Akinsanya is president and CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group and founder of the People of Color Career Fair. And welcome, Sharon. Good
Thank
to have you here.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Isaac, I want to come to you because you're in the middle of this. You are living this. Are you one of those increasingly rare college students who are going to manage to graduate without a lot of student loan debt?
Well, this is my second go at my education.
Okay.
I'm a modern day student. Once I graduated from high school, I went right into the workforce. And then I went to school, but I was burdened down with lots of debt.
Did you go right from high school to work because you didn't think you had enough money to go to college, or you were not at that point feeling like you were college material?
I don't think that there's lots of 17, 18-year-olds that really know what they want to do.
Yeah.
Or that have a 5-10-year plan. So my dad recommended to me, go make sure that you have something to show for yourself. So I went out and got a job.
So when you thought about going back to college, how did you think about how you were going to pay for it?
I didn't. I thought about location, location, location. And I wanted to be in Arizona, so that's where I went. But then I found out about out-of-state tuition. And so the number I thought that I was going to pay significantly changed right away from the get-go.
Do you remember the numbers when you first started looking into this?
A full course credit load, it was about, like, one was like $4,000 or $5,000 and the other was $2,000 to $3,000.
Okay.
So I, of course,
wow.
went on like the two, the two level.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, Trey, do you think this is a common story where the dreams maybe outrun the reality of what this is going to cost, and then students have to kind of make peace with how they're going to fulfill their dream and how they're going to pay for it?
Well, absolutely. I think you have an opportunity where you're seeing students that are graduating high school, but what they're being told at home is that, hey, you need to go and get the major that has the most money. And so we're seeing a lot of students, especially in the private area, we're seeing a lot of students come in that want to major in the sciences, that want to go down pre-med, that want to start their own business. But they might not have a background in science or math or economics or anything like that. But this is what the message that they're being told. So now, all of a sudden, you're taking on this debt in an area that you really are not passionate about, but an area that you just want to get the job to get the most money out of.
Sharon, do you run into that?
Well, listen, you know, I run into that a lot. You know, what's most important as I have a 21-year-old that's a junior at Northeastern University in Boston. And what's most important is to make sure that young people get the information about how to pay. And I think that the state of Minnesota and lots of other states are not giving out a lot of information as to what revenue and what scholarships and what opportunities are available for young people to tap into so that we can reduce the debt load. Not that we won't have the loans, but, you know, there's a lot of scholarships out there. And I think that the schools and I think that the state and I think that the public service announcements and all of us need to do a better job of making sure that kids know. But with regard to, you know, I had debt. I was 44 when I paid mine.
Were you really?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
I was in my mid-40s when I paid.
Yeah, because I came from a household who preached you got to go to school and get that high paying job. Mm-hmm. Right, Trey? Mm-hmm. And but we were poor. You know, it was like you're going to college, you're going to be the first and you need to figure it out. And so the figure it out was the low interest loan. OK, and the Pell Grants and all those things. But I was 44 years old before I actually got rid of all of my debt.
I'm really glad you brought up the transparency issue around what it's going to cost and what you're going to make. I mean, this is something that it seems like colleges recoil from actually being fully transparent on that.
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, because when you think about investing $500,000, $600,000 or whatever it is in your college education and come out to make, you know, $30,000 a year, there's a return on investment that just doesn't add up. So they're not advertising that part, you know, and I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with making $30,000 a year. But if you really think about it, you know, it's like, OK, I'm investing $500,000. I'm going to go on to grad school. And this is what's at the end of the rainbow. And then I've got to take a little bit of that $30,000 and then make the payment on the student loan. That's a problem. So the return on investment is not widely advertised, and it needs to be.
Isaac, I'd love to know how you, now that you're back in school, and as you say, you're the modern student, but you're a little older than a lot of, right, coming out of high school, how you're making those calculations about what it's costing to get your education, what you're going to do with it, and how the salary will meet that.
Lots of questions. Going into the administrative suites and really asking, you know, if I sign up for this class, what's the cost that I don't see on paper?
Do you ask that question? You are so smart.
I do now.
Good for you. Wow.
I do now. I learned from beautiful disasters.
Like what?
Trying to pay off a welding school from Dunwoody. That was my vehicle to pay off all of my debt. Was to get certified in a trade, in a job that, you know, the workforce demands. Like, they're literally people showing up at, like, the workshop, taking students out and putting them to work. So that's where I took my interest from and listened to my dad, you know?
I mean, and do you view that as a skill you could always fall back on, or do you view that as what you said was a beautiful disaster?
I think that was the start of my beautiful disaster.
And why? Because it was clear that you were never going to be happy being a welder, or what?
No, not at all. I think definitely working with your hands is and learning a trade is definitely something that needs to be reprioritized.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Around everywhere. But just the price of any education, I don't think any 18 to 20-year-old will be like, okay, I can take on $8,000 right now. Yeah, that seems like a great idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you might sign up for a loan. So all of a sudden now you have $2,000, but you don't see the interest rates. You don't see the number that you're going to actually have to pay back.
Is that what is the cost of this that I don't see on paper? I mean, is that part of the answer to that?
Well, it's just looking short term. What's going to help me now?
Right.
What's going to get me, like, what's going to help me pay this rent, you know, the rent, the Comcast bill, the XL bill? It's not the long term sustainability plan. So once I got that under my belt, then I knew, okay, I have to think 5 years out from now, like what's the revenue streams that I have coming in and what's going out.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I think for college students, specifically in the community and technical realm, I think that's a negative number. I don't think, students are making more money than what they spend.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. Especially if you've put a few years between high school and college, or you're going back to finish or extend your degree, mm-hmm. then you've got living expenses, right? This is real life. Mm-hmm. It's not all going into school.
Yes.
Trey, mm-hmm. what about this, what I was talking with Sharon about, this transparency about where colleges really get real mm-hmm. about what the degree is going to cost and then how much you have to borrow for that, and then what you're going to make.
Well, I think at any point we can always say that we need to be more transparent. Or across the board, I think we can always say that. I feel that at Carleton, we're doing a really good job is that if you go onto our website, is that we actually have a breakdown that once you come in, what you leave with, what degrees have gotten what job.
That's
we have
awesome.
A full breakdown of this. And I think more institutions are starting to move there, but it hasn't been timely. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been as timely as it needs to be. But even going back to that notion, I think understanding is that when students are coming in, you know, now they're becoming educated from their parents. Okay, you need to go and get the fastest route possible.
See, you're worried about this, aren't you?
Oh, I am definitely worried about
this. That it's
all
about the money, the mm-hmm. salary at the end of the line.
Because our students, our young people, they're not allowed to dream anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, it's not the dream. Right now, it's about, hey, you need to get something that's going to be sustainable for you, for us as a family. Because now they're not coming in with just thinking of, hey, I can go and explore for a little while. No, we don't live in that society anymore. We live in a society
chop,
that,
chop.
Okay, chop, chop, we have yeah. to keep moving. And even going along the fact is that you understand when students are coming in, what are they coming in with? A ton of PSEO credits. Mm-hmm. What is the fastest route I can get my 4-year degree? Because I know I want to go to grad school, so that's another debt that I'm going to incur. Now, they're 18 thinking mm-hmm. about grad school already. Mm-hmm. They don't have the right to dream anymore.
Right. Well, they're going to have to figure out how to dream at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that's really what it is, because when we think about what's going on with the workforce, I mean, we really have an issue. You know, we need to make sure that we're having skilled workers. And as I think about all of us here, you know, and as the population growth changes, you know, to be majority people of color, we've got to move people of color through the pipeline faster. And so while I absolutely agree with Trey, no, young people don't have a chance to really dream and explore the way they used to. But I do think there is a new normal to try to do a little bit mm-hmm. of it simultaneously, because we need you to get there faster, because we will lose economic advantage if you don't.
But see, I think we can all hear the tension between what you two are
yeah.
talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That time moment in your life to let your imagination roam and to think about all the possibilities out of high school, mm-hmm. starting a new education, is essential.
That's right.
And yet I hear you, Sharon, going, if you drop away because you can't afford it and you couldn't finish, we might lose you for good.
And we don't want to lose you. We don't want to lose you. We need you. And so we want you to take that 4 to 6 years and, yes, try to figure out how to explore and dream and connect, but get it done. Mm-hmm. Because, and I'm so sorry, I know that I hear you, Trey. And but we need you. This is what it's about to be a Minnesotan, what it's about to be an American. And we just need you to just keep things moving forward faster.
So how do we resolve that, Trey?
No, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that statement, because the longer that they stay in school, that they don't figure out, then that's the longer that they're delaying, you know, supporting the economy.
Absolutely.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, how can we figure this out is that we as educators, we need to talk about it up front. I fully agree that we need to talk about this up front. Okay. We understand you have 1 year to really figure this thing out, which is not fair.
Summer.
It's not fair by any means. We understand that. But again, you know what? What is your goal? What is your aspirations? And so I often talk to our students about, okay, what is your why? You know, why are you even in college in the first place? Let's start here. Are you coming to college because it was the next thing to do? Then right there, we got a problem already, because it was just the next thing. Mm-hmm. But it might not be your thing. I have a nephew. I love him dearly. College was not his forte. We understand it. Okay, great. Then let's go learn a trade. Let's go do something else. But what is your why? Why are you even starting this journey in
That's
the first
right.
place?
I want to ask Isaac what your why was when you started, when you were just out of high school, and then how that's changed with today, how you'd answer that question.
My why now is I want to be able to provide, one, for my family. So I just got married July 21st.
Oh, congratulations.
So I want to be able to provide for Ashley and for our kids that we will have in the future. Because mm-hmm. Both of us were both adopted, and our parents were able to really just take care of us in the Plymouth, Minnesota area. And I want to be able to do the same. And power nowadays is education.
Absolutely.
So I refocused my definition of what power meant to me.
Uh-huh.
And so instead of being like, you know, big, bad, physical, this, that, and the other, exercise the brain muscle, you know. So that's why I'm doing like a business degree with psychology, because you have to be able to understand like how people think and what motivates people. And I'm doing political science just because
it's interesting.
Yes, very, very interesting.
Right? Okay, I want to hear what Trey and Sharon hear in your why today. Trey?
You know, I hear you as someone who values where they came from, but values also where they want to go. You know, you have a vision. And I think oftentimes right now for the traditional age, which we need to redefine what traditional age
there
is, as
go.
We were talking,
right.
You know, the 18 to 22 year old,
exactly.
A lot of them don't have a vision right now. They're just doing what that they have seen their friends do. They're doing what they've seen their peers do. They're doing what they see their family do. But here you have a young man who clearly has a vision as to where he wants to go and knows that he's going to have some late nights doing it, but has a desire to get there.
What are you hearing it, Sharon?
Oh, I hear very similar to Trey, you know, a young man who took a different path, mm-hmm. but is still getting the end result and understands his why and clearly understands that he has to make sure that he is going to have to invest in himself, invest in his career, and so that he can take care of his family. And his why is making sure that he and his family are okay. And I think that that path is absolutely fine he understands the why and the how, and actually can pay it forward based on his journey.
Right.
To be able to counsel other young people as they're moving through their journeys. It's not always a straight line.
So, Isaac, would you say you're incorporating a lot of the practicality that Sharon has talked about so far with some of the imagination and the idealism that Trey wants incorporated into this decision? Are you with that, or are you kind of more weighted on the practicality side of this? Because you have a family now.
Well, yeah, I'm with that, but just with my role within my organization, I think I'm taking a stance on how to show students how to be professional.
Okay,
that's right.
And how to sit through a meeting, how to, you know, look at agenda and be engaged and, you know, find your passion, what really moves you, and what's going to help other people.
So this is really fulfilling. This is
mm-hmm.
yeah. This is kind of speaking to your idealism about who you're going to be in mm-hmm. the world.
Well, in Minnesota, we need an educated workforce.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No matter if you're bagging groceries or if you're, you know, the CEO of Target, you need to be educated, because by the year 2020, which is very, very soon,
right?
3 out of 4 jobs, Minnesota is going to require a post-secondary degree.
What happens then,
well,
Sharon?
Well, here's what's going to happen. So, you know, Isaac is absolutely right. In 2020, I mean, we're screaming the workforce. We're going to be short 100,000. And so when you think about in the last decade, 82% of the population growth in Minnesota came from people of color, and that we have an unemployment and underemployment rate that's 3 times that. Their white counterparts, and we can't find folks to fill the jobs in Minnesota. We got to chop for real, though. Okay, to make sure that all young people have access to a quality education, and then they're coming out prepared to get moving into the workforce. This is the obligation of the state. To the second part of your question that you might get to later mm-hmm. on with regard to what is the obligation mm-hmm. of society
yeah, right.
to make sure that everybody's right. moving through, up and over, because we are in trouble deep if Minnesota and the top corporations, top employers do not figure this out. And that's why I want young people to explore who's doing tuition reimbursement. Who's paying for grad school?
Company-wise,
because we are in crisis mode. And when folk are in crisis mode and we're about to lose economic standing because we're not doing what we need to do faster to get people into the workforce, specifically people of color, all kinds of money starts to float around and, you know, stuff that wasn't there before. Like, ooh, look at that. Target's paying this and Medtronic's doing that. And U.S. Bank is doing this. And, you know, so I want young people to really explore, even before they go off, what corporations are mm-hmm. doing and who's paying for what and what their opportunities are.
You know, what you're saying is something that always comes up in our conversations about the achievement gap,
mm-hmm.
Sharon. If your child or your community supports a really great middle school, kindergarten, or high school, that's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not your problem. that we have the achievement gap.
It's all of our problems. Wide as,
that's what I'm saying.
Yes. Right. Yes. That belongs to all of us. See, we're in the same sandbox. We're all Minnesotans. We're all Americans. And so if it's not, if it's in my backyard, trust me, it's in your backyard too. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, we have to band together to make sure that young people, all young people, no matter what race, creed, or color, we just happen to have a crisis with people of color in Minnesota that we need to focus on and fix, because the population growth is changing. So, you know, in a minute, nearly 3 in 10 Minnesotans are going to be of color. Mm-hmm. It's already that way in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center. Majority are already people of color. So we have to make sure that folks are educated, because I don't know about you guys, but when I get 70, 80, 90, I want an educated person taking care of me. Okay. So I have a vested interest in making sure that young people really have the information that they need to get to and through college, and then ultimately onto my career fair, right? To make sure that they're connected to top Minnesota employers who are looking for them.
When you're 70, 80, and 90, you also want an educated workforce contributing to Social Security.
Absolutely.
That you'll be
so
using,
you can,
right?
That's right. So you can get those groceries.
Right.
Absolutely.
You're listening to a Friday Roundtable. We're having a conversation about the wider implications of college debt. And it was sparked by a really thoughtful email that came in from a listener named Paula, who makes this argument that society benefits from having a well-educated workforce. And of course, we all know this. But what does it mean that we are laying a burden of student loan debt on our college students who are coming out of school, want that opportunity to be as idealistic and imaginative and creative as they can be, even as we look at the numbers and say, we need more educated workers in the state of Minnesota and in the U.S. at large? So how do those two meet? And that's what we're ending up talking about today. Sharon Smith Akinsanya is with us today. She's president and CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group, and she's founder of the People of Color Career Fair. Isaac Jarrus is with us, majoring in business at Normandale Community College, and he's involved in an organization that advocates for college students in Minnesota. And Trey Williams is here. He's director of TRIO Student Support Services at Carleton College. Trey, I think this brings us back to kind of where we started, mm-hmm. which is with the needs that Sharon laid out really well and what college costs today. Something breaks in the middle of that. Where does that come back to? To the state? I mean, to companies? To individuals? What do you think?
Well, first, I think we need to understand that, as Sharon said, is that it is all of us have to be invested in this from the ground up. You know, one, we can go even further back of the notion of social promotion.
That's right.
You know, if we can get away from social promotion of just, hey, you're not at grade reading level, but I'm going to promote you anyways because I want you to stay where you are, then we're not going to get the educated workforce. By the time they graduate, well, they're not educated enough to do the job that's needed there. So again, it is all of us across the board. I think as we talk about college tuition, as we talk about the debt, I think you're seeing students that are trying to find a way, okay, how can I get through college, you know, without taking on so much debt? For example, they're getting very creative. You know, maybe I don't take on the room and board. You know, maybe I live off campus in an apartment with some friends here, so then all I have to pay is just tuition. Okay, maybe I'll work two jobs here or do this here. So now, yes, they're being burdened because of the fact is that they have this debt. They have this thing that is weighing on them at like an anvil. But now I'm trying to figure, okay, what's the fastest way I can get there? However, I got to work to get there because now I got, as I said, I got bills to pay. I have other things. So they're not that traditional route that they can't take anymore.
That's exactly
I think
right.
We need to get rid of that notion.
Isaac, do you see more and more students who are coming into Normandale and participating in the organization that you're with that are doing what Trey is suggesting, making compromises from, you know, that ideal, what we set up as the ideal of the college experience, which is all I ever, you know, I just focus on my studies and I live the full college life. And they're having to make some of these compromises to make this real.
Yes, I see some making good compromises. And then also on the flip side, some making bad ones. Mm-hmm. They want to take, 16 credits. Great. But then they also have to balance like 40 hours a week with a job. And then, you know, in that first couple weeks of school, they're like, okay, I have to roll back a little bit. But when they take 14 credits and then they bump it down to 10 or 8,
you lose financial aid. So the money that you thought you had coming in all of a sudden might get slashed by a third. And so now they're looking at the number like, oh, well, that's not going to cover my school. I have this thing called the Pell Grant, but that's not covering my, my school bill and tuition. Okay, now they're faced with the question, do I go to work or do I go to school? And that's a cycle that I see a lot of students going down. I went down it myself. And eventually you have to drop out and then you have to start up again. But it's a vicious cycle. So there's good and bad compromises out there.
I'm just curious about how long you were out when you dropped out and what was really the factor that took that brought you back.
So it was 2009 that I dropped out, and then 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 2015 when I went back in.
Wow.
And it was just it was actually Don Levins, my father-in-law, just like, hey, you're in this spot, but you need to go back to school. You need to really, really, really prioritize that. And just hearing him say that and allowing me to live in his house. So that was a burden lifted off of me. So like I didn't have to pay rent, so I could get into school, get a job, save money. So eventually I could get an apartment, still pay the school bill. But I had to put myself in a position to have that much money.
You know, Sharon, we probably came that close to losing him.
Oh,
right?
Real close to lose. I mean, but not for his complete support system and circle of influence, support system. And let me say, we all are the support system, not just Isaac's father-in-law, his father, his sisters, his now wife. His mom, his extended family, all of us are Isaac's support system. Is it Dr. Joyce Esther? Who is the president of Normandale? She is Isaac's support system and the other Isaacs. Okay. So it's all of us. When we need to make it a point to have meaningful conversations with young people about their lives. And corporations are also need to step up and do an even better job. They're doing a great job and an even better job in making sure organizations and institutions like Normandale have private funds that they can support these young people when there's this gap. So corporations are doing a really good job, but we can all step up and do better.
Trey?
No, I absolutely fully agree with that statement. I think at the private sector and the private college, I think we're doing a great job of trying to meet that need. But again, we have different access. We have different resources that
That's
we can
right.
use there. You know, within TRIO, and this is one of the things that we're instituting, this is one of the things that Carleton is an initiative that we're trying to do here. Something is missing in higher ed. There's one aspect that we don't talk about with students of color, majority students, whatever. Financial literacy.
That's right.
We don't have an opportunity to really talk to students about making smart financial responsibilities. You know, they have to do their econ, they have to do their biology, they have to do all of these different things. Okay, well, in TRIO, we're starting this new initiative. We're just piloting with our seniors. We're going to take you through a year-long financial literacy where we're going to work on how do you build credit?
That's right.
How do you look at interest rates? You know, once I get out of here, okay, I have to pay my student loans, but now I also have to pay rent.
Right.
You know, this is that other level of education that right. we need to have in higher ed. But again, time and whose responsibility is it?
Well, I think it's all of our responsibilities. And that's where people like U.S. Bank, you know, Thriving Financial, Wells Fargo, those corporations can step up and help with those types of things, be it in a private or a public institution.
I feel like this sounds like a good project. Senior year seems late, you know?
It does. It does. But they're also the ones that are really starting to think about, okay, what are my next steps? What is this thing that I have to go and do?
Suddenly it's real,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Friday Roundtable. It's a conversation about what it means that we are layering and burdening so many young college graduates with student loan debt. Part of what it means is we lose them from finishing their degree. We lose them from the beginning, not ending up in a two-year or four-year school. And families have to confront this idea of, with all the other expenses and obligations, what it means to try to help put a son or daughter through college. So we gathered a round table around on this, and we're talking about this morning, and I want to hear from you. Have you had to make, because of student loan debt, different career decisions or personal decisions? Have you had to change your aspirations because you owe thousands of dollars in student loan debt? So what has this meant for your own experience, for your family's experience. Talk to me about it on Twitter. It's at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Sharon Smith Akinsanya is with us. She's president and CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group. Isaac Jarrus is with us. He's what he called a modern student. He went back to finish his degree. And he's at Normandale Community College, and he's involved in an organization that advocates for college students in Minnesota. And Trey Williams is with us, director of TRIO Student Support Services at Carleton College. Trey, I want to come right back to something that you mentioned that you want to talk about, and that's the increase in tuition. So even if you're managing right now to try to keep up with the cost of tuition and all your other living expenses, each year, often, you're hit with an increase in tuition. What do we do about that?
So you're hit with a 2 to 3% increase. And even if they say that they're going to freeze it, well, eventually it's going to go up there.
Right.
You know, some of the things that colleges are doing, okay, now we're trying to get really creative with financial aid. While the increase may happen, then, you know, we're going to match that. We're going to continue the commitment. But does that commitment get met with loans?
Mm-hmm.
Does that commitment get met with, you know, more work study now? How does that commitment really get met there? Now, the institution is committed to meeting your demonstrated need. But your need hasn't changed, but the rise in tuition has changed.
But that would be Carleton is committed. There's only so many 100% need met schools.
That's
Carleton being
true.
One of them. So that's very, so we want to be clear on
that. But this
that.
Is unusual. It's, this well, is fairly rare?
Well, there's not. There's some schools, there's some private institutions, and you know, but not all, who are what we call 100% need met school. That means that if they want you, they will work with you and demonstrate how they can support you and making sure 100% of your tuition is covered. And that could mean loans as well.
Mm.
So I don't want to make that seem like it's a, but it could mean loans as well. But they are committed to making sure that you're paid. And Carleton is one of those schools.
What do you do if you're not at a school like Carleton?
If you're not at a school, this is where the financial literacy comes in. This is where we have to become educated in the process, because we can't expect for us to go in and pay $28,000 for 4 years. That does not happen. And so we have to go in with the notion of, and I think a lot of first years do this, or non-traditional students, we do this, is that we look at scholarships that first year. As Sharon said, we don't continue to help look for scholarships. We don't continue in the process to help look for grants, anything like
we
that.
We being the school itself or the student?
Both.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge gap that we have.
I didn't know this. So you're saying often that search for scholarships ends after, I mean, somewhere in the middle of your first year.
Because you're in. So
then,
you think,
okay,
so that's it. And then you don't, but you can't continue because there are scholarships that are available that are just for freshmen only or sophomores only. And for, you know, free money is hard to find. You have to get on those websites, you know, whether it's scholarships.com or uncf.org, for example, or, you know, other places. There's money out there, but it takes time and commitment.
Well, I was
going to
say, this sounds challenging.
It
you're
is.
In college.
No, free money's not easy. Don't get it twisted. Mm-hmm. Free money is absolutely not easy to come by, but the money is out there. But Trey is right. Technically, once you get in and you sort of kind of move on, and then you got to figure out what happens next year. That summer, you know, then the next year, you know, because it's just chunking it out. It really is just chunking it out. So.
And students don't understand that some institutions, their specific department will have a scholarship for them.
That's correct.
But again, that's something that you have to go and find out.
Nobody's just saying, hey, have you been over to the science college lately? You know, they've got free. Nobody's doing that. You know, so I mean, you have to really be proactive and make sure that you have a solid support system. Know what you don't know. But also know what questions to ask by making sure you surround yourself with the right people who can give you that information.
Isaac, if I might just, Trey, just to follow up on that, what do you say about that specifically to the students that you're working with?
The students need to know where to find scholarships in the first place.
Okay.
So if, like at Normandale, students would need to know that there is a financial aid office. But they would also need to know instead of, because like the first point of contact is, here's a loan. But I think it should be, here's a scholarship opportunity, because loans and interest rates, I don't like them. it's just not my thing. I'd rather go for the scholarship route.
But you need to know where to find that.
Yes.
Okay.
And having access to it or getting the right information, because like international students, one of my personal friends, Hassan, he's the treasurer at Normandale Student Senate.
Uh-huh.
He was raised in Somalia. So Somali was his first language. Then he learned Arabic, and then English.
Wow.
It's so, like, anything he has to translate, he's got to do it in, like, the Somali, like, lens, then Arabic, then to English. And by the time that that all happens, the scholarship date has probably passed. Or, and just, like, for my thing, like, if he's taking, a 30-minute quiz, like, 10-question quiz on the Desire to Learn page, there's nowhere enough time to get from language A to language C. So it's not just us, like just the normal students, international students, like English not being your first language, huge.
Yeah.
Huge, especially for the FAFSA form, if we're talking about scholarships.
Right.
If you can't read that form and English isn't your first language, you check the wrong box, bye-bye financial aid.
Again, back to knowing what you don't know. And figuring out who you need to surround yourself with to get that stuff done.
Yeah.
I mean, so those are not insurmountable hurdles. I mean, I know they're challenges, but that can be fixed. Mm-hmm. That can be done by understanding who you need to support you to make that happen.
Trey, I interrupted. You were going to add.
Well, no, absolutely. I want to agree with that. But I also want us to look at both sides of the situation right now. Is that while institutions, yes, we can probably do a better job. Absolutely. But then the student, we also got to empower the student to self-advocate as well.
Absolutely.
You know, no one is going to go out there and give you free money. You're going to have to search for it.
Absolutely.
You are going to have to go and seek out your resources and begin to ask questions.
Absolutely.
And this is something that we have to build. Even before they get to college is the notion of how to ask a question, how to find out your resource. So there has to be a little bit of a give and take on the student side as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's where society and parents caring adults come in. You know, for my 21-year-old, I was real clear. You need to get it for yourself. Okay, you seriously need to figure this out and make sure you have great grades. Make sure you get merit scholarships. Make sure, because the schools that you're talking about are $60,000 a year.
Is Northeastern like that expensive?
$62,000 a year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So because I was her mother and she had those support systems that we were talking about, she knew exactly what the path was to get into those types of schools.
Right.
She understood what 100% need med schools are. She understood, don't even apply it to the other ones. She understood all that, but she had me, right, and other people to support her to make sure that happened. So that's why support systems, I think, are really, really important. And that falls on all of us.
Sharon, I just want to use that example of tuition for a minute here, though, to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever student loan debt comes up and choosing a college comes up in our conversations, I think of all – now, your daughter is probably having a wonderful experience at Northeastern,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of schools that cost a lot less mm-hmm. that she wouldn't have had to – I don't know if she's borrowing or not for
this. Right, but that's my point. Because she had the support system –
she knew how to
right, of
make
people
this
like
work.
A Trey, like right. an Isaac and like a me and like her grandma and other people. She understood where to apply.
Got it.
Okay, so that she can get 100% of her need met, but she was also – a 3.8 student, you know, she got, you know,
she
it was a different sort of program. So Ray is not typical.
But we also,
what I'm saying is that's why she was able to do it.
Understood. Mm-hmm. We also, though, get caught up in kind of the name, the label of the school, the idea that there's only one or two schools that can fulfill my,
yes.
you know, my dream
yes.
college experience.
Yeah.
And there's all these great colleges
absolutely.
That cost a lot less that I think never get considered into the mix.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that it's really about a best fit.
Right.
You know, so that's your first criteria. What's the best fit for me? And then how do I then get there? You know, so whether it's Normandale or Carleton or Grinnell or Northeastern mm-hmm. or Northwestern or American or what was the other one your sister?
Pepperdine. Yeah.
So,
which I think is an expensive school, isn't it?
They're Very. All pricey. They're all pricey. School is, let's just stipulate. that they're all expensive.
But there are some excellent schools that you often don't hear of unless you're looking for great education matched with pretty reasonable tuition. What's Carleton cost these days?
A lot. no, and I ain't mad at Carleton, but it's a lot.
Carleton's 64.
64. So, see, Carleton's more than Northeastern.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
You know, you look at it, so you have students who are applying to schools, and what are they doing once they apply? Once they get all of their acceptance letters,
mm-hmm.
once they get all of their financial aid package, then they're sitting down like, okay, who is providing me the most money?
That's
whether
right.
I want to go to that school or not,
right.
who is providing right. me the most money?
Yes.
And then, can I see myself there?
There
can
you
I
go.
Get through 3 years? Can I get through 4 years?
Yeah.
So they're not... necessarily making the decision upon. Sometimes it's the best fit. We hope it's the best fit. We really do. But now we're seeing more students like, who's going to give me the best offer right now?
That is absolutely the final decision. But when you're looking, right, and you're narrowing it down to those five schools, these are schools that you think are the best fit. And then you have to then go to the second criteria, right? Well, that one I love for sure, but I can't afford it. And so this one gave me the best package, you know, so it's all of those things. But you have to have a support system. You have to, I mean, find somebody off the street. I just don't care. Find somebody that you can ask some questions to about how to do this process of applying for college and paying for it.
Isaac, you wanted to talk about equity in this process. So what are you thinking about?
Whew. Just having the educational institutions, like for my realm, it'd be like Normandale, the Minnesota State offices, and the Office of Higher Education being committed to equity.
Making sure that when you say equity.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, I guess for starters, for Minnesota State, there we did a forum for the chief diversity officer. And it's one position that it's not standardized. It doesn't have a general job description. And so just wanting Minnesota State to address these issues.
Are you talking about
disparity.
getting more students of color in the door, or what happens with the experience once you're there and you're on campus?
Both, because once the student's in the door, that doesn't, they can still fall through the cracks.
Yeah, it doesn't absolve the school of responsibility. But I guess I'm asking where you see the most urgent attention that needs to be paid.
Ooh, I mean, all over. You could start with the student advisor ratio. You could start with just like the access, marginalized communities.
The immigrant population that you talked about.
Yeah, like with international, man, or like people coming from like the international students with 4-year degrees mm-hmm. coming to Minnesota, and then the education system not recognizing their 4-year degree and having essentially to start all over again.
Right.
There's so many just little questions, but it would just be, I think, more efficient if we had a top-down strategy. So if the Minnesota State recognize it, set the bar for everyone else below, which would be all the 48 institutions for community and technical colleges to follow along.
Sharon?
That's when I talk about treasure. These young people, they are ours. You know, they are our treasure. Once they hit Minnesota, we're crazy if we don't make sure that they get exactly what they need to get the education that they need to be able to fall into the workforce. We have somewhere between 18, 19, 20, depending on what it is, Fortune 500 companies here in Minnesota. We must make sure that we're educating our young people. We can't just leave them on the playing field.
So what do companies do about that? And are they being creative enough on that?
Well, I think that, you know, to Isaac's part, it starts at the top. So we're talking about, you know, initiatives from Governor Dayton and then James Burrows, who is our, I think, the nation's only chief inclusion officer at the state level. You know, we need to pay attention to the initiatives that they're doing and give them the support they need to get some of the things done that Isaac is talking about. So we need to know who we need to be supporting to make sure that we get some of these things done.
What about the companies themselves?
I think the companies are, you know, they are just doing, they've got the resources there. And they are working really hard by partnering with people like me to get some of the answers and get some of the things that they need to do to move the needle forward on making sure that young people are educated and then moved into a job. There's nothing more dignified than having a good paying job,
Sharon,
from a solid education.
When you hear CEOs talk about the skills gap, and we still hear a lot of CEOs say this,
mm-hmm.
People come to our doorstep and they want a job, but they don't have the skills and they don't have the education mm-hmm. that we need.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know how you hear that and whether there is responsibility on the side of corporate America, too, for that.
Absolutely. There is it is a combined collective responsibility. So when you see somebody coming to your door that has a skills gap, what programs do you have in place to get them ready for the next round? Okay, so you got to look back and yes, the responsibility is for the state to make sure they're delivering an educated workforce to our employers. Absolutely. But what can you do as well? So, and I do think that corporations are starting to do a better job at paying attention to what is my responsibility for that. I can tell it in the work that I'm doing. So I know we're getting there at this to know that it's collective. We are in the same sandbox, and I'm so proud to be a Minnesotan because I'm talking to these CEOs, and I know that things are changing. We just got to keep pushing. Isaac, you need to get on the phone with the James Burrows and Governor Dayton and tell them what you need to make sure. We can't be afraid to push the envelope. And so if you need those phone numbers, I have them. But this is a treasure. These are a treasure.
Trey, what would you say about that?
I would absolutely say, you know, it's all our responsibility. It is absolutely a treasure because one of the things, we don't know what jobs are going to be here in 2025.
Right.
We don't know what jobs are going to be here in 2020. We don't know. But what we do know is that Minnesota has a pool of talented young individuals, young students who just need a little bit of direction, who need some support, who need to be just carried through the process, and who also need to be empowered to go out there and find the jobs and find the resource. We have the talent here. We just have to do a better job.
At taking care of it. We just have to take care of each other. Is that simple? Can we just take care of each other?
It's not that simple, though.
No, absolutely not.
So can we just, if we have a political will and a moral will to take care of our treasure like we do our families, this is our treasure, the state of Minnesota. If we have the will to do that, then we will.
Hearing you talk about it like that, Sharon, is really inspiring. And then I remember, and there's been a unfortunate tradition of this year after year at the state capitol is underfunding the requests from the state institutions. It's gotten a little better, but we went through a period where there was a big gap between what the institution said they needed and what they got from the state legislature.
No question about it. You know, so I understand, which is why I'm saying that we must have the moral and political will to do what's right, to take care of our treasure. And that responsibility falls on all of us, including average citizens who just have to say, hey, I want everybody to have access to what makes Minnesota great for all.
What's the thing, Isaac, that you wish you'd known at the beginning of all of this that you know now? The beginning of the whole educational odyssey that you've been on?
Workforce developmental scholarships.
Really? That's not what I thought you were going to say. Why?
Well, there's scholarships out there for jobs that are high in demand. So if you get into that field and then you talk to the right person, not all school paid for, but you can be well on your way to start getting that debt paid off.
Okay. Rewind to that high school student who was kind of like, I don't know what I want to do. And you learned somehow about these workforce development scholarships. How might things have been different?
I'd probably be a senator right now somewhere or a district representative.
Yeah? Congress? To the state legislature?
To the state legislature.
Wow.
You can still do
Fantastic.
That. Fantastic. And we need young people to run. So, just saying.
But what are you saying with that? That the search has slowed those ambitions down. Is that what you mean?
Not necessarily slowed down, but I found the realm where I can make the change and where my voice is heard. Because when you're a constituent, people listen.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish I would have known that starting my education, not however many years I am into it now.
You know, it's really refreshing that you want to go into politics.
Yes.
Because you know that there's a lot of college graduates, talented people who want nothing to do with politics. So why are you the exception to that?
Every vote matters, and making connections matter. Whether it's with a district representative or a senator, or you know, going out to the corners of Minnesota and finding the people who it affects, and just hearing their story, because stories are very, very powerful. And especially when you can just listen to someone else's words and be inspired. I think that's just the power behind the story.
Well, it's super inspiring
yes,
to hear your story. Hey, thank you all for a great roundtable. I want to say one more thing for Twitter. If you just got in on this discussion at the end of it, I'd like to know about whether you've had to make different career decisions or different personal decisions because you owe thousands of dollars in student loan debt. So you can go back on the podcast and listen to this conversation if you missed it. But I'd really like to hear from you on Twitter, and we can keep that going, and I'll retweet some of your thoughts. So it's at Kerri, KerriMPR, on Twitter. And thank you for a really enlightening, interesting roundtable.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you, Kerri.